Hey, everybody. This week, my guest is Dr. Doug Lucas. He's a return guest. You may remember him from a conversation about metabolic health. His practice actually has two arms, the metabolic health side and bone health. He works super successfully with women and men of all ages to prevent further bone loss and reverse bone loss, like restore your bones to healthy. And he talks about his system. We also discussed exercise. I was shocked to find out that some of the things that we hear that are really good for our bones, like power walking up a hill, not so much. We need to do more. And we talked about the drugs. I specifically asked if he felt that any of the drugs were safe. In what situation would they be safe, for how long, and his preferred drug if you have an option. So tune in. It's super important for us over 50 women, over 60, over 70, to keep these bones strong so that we don't have a fracture. This is the Rebellious Wellness Over 50 podcast. I'm Greg Cox, your host, and I believe it's time to bust the myth that aging equals decline or irrelevance. Nonsense. Aging happens, but it doesn't have to ruin your life. Each week, you'll hear experts who think and practice outside the box of conventional wisdom on how to age in good health so you can live fully expressed. I'm here to bust myths, help you embrace change, and live life your way. If you feel like the best of life has passed, it's time to get a little rebellious in your approach. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Rebellious Wellness Over 50, where we bring you information that you won't find on the first three or four pages of Google, but could change your life. And today I have Dr. Doug Lucas, who I've interviewed before. You may have heard him. We talked about metabolic health. Dr. Doug has two branches of his medical profession business. One is metabolic health and one is bone health. And today it's all about the bones, because I haven't done a bone conversation. I think we touched on it when I talked to you last
time. Probably just a little bit, yeah.
I really want to give this entire conversation over to you in helping people understand what is true about I've got osteoporosis, what isn't, is there anything I can do, prevention, drugs, all that stuff. So Dr. Doug Lucas, welcome.
Yeah, well, thank you so much again for having me back. I do remember we chatted about it maybe just really briefly, but we really wanted to focus on the metabolic health thing, which is really important. It is really, it's a big deal. So my practice really grew into bone health. I mean, a lot since we've last talked. We were doing it then, just not quite as much. So one of the things that we had started around that previous recording was a bone health YouTube channel. And that has really grown to serve a very large worldwide community. And so what's great about that is that has really stimulated me to grow a team to support that. We are continuing to refine our protocol around that. And what we're seeing, to your first point, is osteoporosis should not be viewed as a death sentence. It should not be viewed as inevitable. It should not be viewed as I'm going to have a fracture or I'm fragile. It should be viewed as simply something that happened that we need to then do something about. And it is absolutely reversible in most people.
Wow. Did you hear that, people? Reversible for most people.
Yeah. I say that boldly, and I could get criticized for it harshly, but I have the data to prove it. And yeah. I have people in the bone health community that are, you know, in other businesses that we can talk about today that are seeing the same thing. So we've all been told, oh, you know, osteoporosis will happen to all of us and you can't do anything about it. And all you can do is go on drugs. And it's absolutely not true. Hmm.
I just want to talk a quick second about how we get the diagnosis. So there's the DEXA, there's a Gehler bone scan, and then there's the one that's like an ultrasound that you mentioned when we talked
about the REMS. Yeah.
The REMS. Mm-hmm. Just do a quick, like, should we get one or the other?
Well, so everybody will eventually get a DEXA if they're interested in their bones, because that's what most people have access to. So it's globally available. It's covered by Medicare if you're over 65. It's covered by insurance companies if you have the right, you know, pre-existing conditions or whatever. So everybody will get a DEXA. DEXA is what the World Health Organization and most of the US organizations have used to define osteoporosis. So literally, osteoporosis is by definition a what's called a T-score, which I'll explain in a second, but it's a T-score that you get off of a DEXA. There's no other way to define osteoporosis. So we're kind of wrapped into that. which is a little bit unfortunate because DEXA is not a very good study. It's an inaccurate study. There's inaccuracies from machine to machine, from operator to operator, meaning the person that's doing the scan. You have to be in the right position. So there's just a, there's a number of variables that can give you a plus or minus of probably around 2 to 3%.
Wow.
Which is kind of a lot when you consider that the improvement of the drugs and some of the therapies are around 1 to 2%. So how do we know? Is this in the margin of error? Are we actually getting better? Or if we're not getting better, is it actually in the margin of error? It's really, really confusing for people. And unfortunately, there's just not a better solution. And once something becomes the gold standard, it's really hard to unseat it. So the other thing that you mentioned, the REMS, which is an ultrasound study, in the United States, there's only, I think there's 5 of them. So fortunately, they're regionally placed. So they're conveniently located around the country, except for California. And if you have access to one, it's great. It's probably more accurate, although we can't prove it. Because again, once something is the gold standard, you can't prove that something is more or less accurate. You can only say it is the same or different than the gold standard. But I think it's probably better. And it also gives you a what's called a fragility score. So it tells you about bone strength rather than just bone density. Because really what we care about is not the density of your bones. We care about your fracture risk. I don't really care if you have poor bone density. I care if you're going to fracture. And density is part of that, but strength is also a part of that. And it's probably around 50-50 to the significance of each one. So just looking at DEXA and getting a density measurement is really only half of the equation. You really need to know the other half.
Interesting. Okay, so we have to, just a reminder from that same conversation, you have to try to get your DEXAs, if you get them every couple of years, from the same place, your chances are will not get the same operator, but at least that's a little bit of something.
If you can do same machine, that's better. And we do have people that are pretty good about that. But yeah, you're never going to get the same. I mean, you can't try to get the same operator. That's not going to happen. But same machine if you can.
Same machine. Okay. Let's now talk about the bones. When we say we're going to reverse osteoporosis, the Western medical model doesn't generally give us information on how to do that. So what's left out? What, I mean, I don't really know. I know things because I've been studying this for a long time and I've had you before and read books. But if I were an average everyday human, the bottom line for most people is they don't hear, or they do maybe hear like eat leafy greens, maybe you should take hormones, which we can talk about in a minute. But what is the foundation for a healthy bone recovery?
Yeah, well, so let me just mention what they do in the traditional medical model, which is mostly none of that. So they will say that it's not reversible. And I don't say this to be mean or to slight the medical profession. This is just how the doctors are trained. And this is how I was trained. You have osteoporosis. There's nothing you can do about it. Take this drug because it's going to slow down your bone loss. It's going to help you not fracture. And ultimately, the goal is the same, to not have a fracture, because that fracture is pretty terrible. And to clarify that, hip fracture is what I mostly worry about with my training as an orthopedic surgeon. Treating hip fractures, I saw people's lives completely change or end as a result, right? So it's a big deal. We want to prevent that fracture. Doctors in the traditional medical model will use what they have access to, which is drugs. So I don't fault them for that. But if we truly want to reverse osteoporosis, then we need to take a look at why you have it. So we have this framework, we call it the 4R framework, and we created it just to help people understand how we look at it. And so the first R is to recognize why we're losing bone, right? So what is the cause? We know that most people will lose bone as they age, but why do they have osteoporosis? Was it a bad starting point? Do they have gut dysfunction? Is it a diet problem? Is it a hormone issue? You know, everybody's hormones changes, both men and women, as we age, just in different speeds. So which of those things then can we tackle to create a program that will then reverse those causes of bone loss? And that's the second R, is reverse. So reverse the causes of bone loss and hopefully reverse osteoporosis, which again, we're finding in most people. And then the third R is to retest and make sure we're headed in the right direction. And so this is the not sticking your head in the sand mood. So we want to make sure we know what we're treating, how we're treating it, and then if we're treating it right. And then the fourth R, I just kind of stuck on there because I think it's really important that people understand that you can, what we say is revive your life, but you can live without the fear of fracture. You know, you can understand that you're headed in the right direction. You can understand what your risk is, the things that you need to do, but know what the trajectory is. And for most people, it's getting better. So that's how we structure it. But the actual details of that is a lot of it's driven around lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And this is why the traditional medical system doesn't really have the tools to do this, because they can't help you with lifestyle, right? They could give you a handout, right? Here's this, what I used to do. Here's this handout on how to eat. Here's this handout on weight training. Here's this handout on the right supplements, which would be calcium and vitamin D alone. But it's just not enough. And people aren't going to make change based off of that anyway. And so the doctors get frustrated because people don't change their lifestyle, but people aren't giving what they need to change. And the doctors don't really know what to tell them anyway. So it's sort of a lose-lose situation in the traditional model. But that's the foundation of what we do. And then we use biomarker-driven supplementation. So we're looking at, you know, in blood, in functional testing, what are you actually deficient in? And this goes to that first R. So then we're using supplements, and it can be kind of a lot sometimes because people come in and they're really deficient in a lot of stuff. So repleting all of those things and then giving them sort of the treatment side, the super physiologic side to help get them better. And then we talk about hormone replacement, and we definitely should dig into that. If they're candidates for that and the risk benefit. And then we also potentially use things like peptides. We have the capacity to use drugs. We generally don't end up using drugs for most people because we just don't need it. Unless somebody comes in with a really high risk and I want to get them out of the hole faster.
As long as you're talking about the drugs, I mentioned earlier to you, you did a post on a drug for people that need that, who are in that condition where they really need a drug to help prevent a fracture. What is the drug that you were talking about that you feel safe?
Yeah. So I look at the drugs kind of in two main classes, and there's some crossover, but basically there's the drugs that slow down breakdown. So those would be what's called the anti-resorptive drugs. So that's your bisphosphonates, your Fosamax, your Reclast, there's a whole bunch of them. So those drugs I don't like, because they squash bone metabolism. And I just had a great example of a patient. She's a year and a half out from a reclast infusion. So that's the bisphosphonate that you get once a year. It's an infusion, and it lasts for 12 months, right? Which sounds cool. It's very convenient. But if you have a drug that lasts for 12 months, that means the half-life or the rate of breakdown is extremely long. Mm. So she had labs done for us a year and a half after that infusion, and her bone metabolism biomarker, so we can measure osteoclast and osteoblast function, the cells that break down and build bone respectively. We can measure their function in blood, and her markers were just still absolutely squashed.
Wow.
And so while you can slow down bone loss with those, and you can actually see an increase in bone mineral density on DEXA, what you're not getting is building up of bone. Because if the osteoclasts stop working because the drug poisons them, then the osteoblasts stop working. So you're not building bone. And that's why the complications of those drugs includes this thing called osteonecrosis of the jaw, because your jawbone can't heal. Atypical femur fractures, because you get this dense, like fragile, brittle bone, which looks good on DEXA, but more likely to fracture. So that's not good. I don't like that drug class. There is a time and place for that drug class, though, if you are rapidly losing bone and there's nothing else you can do about it. So a great example of this, and I see so many comments on our YouTube channel about this, is women that are undergoing treatment for breast cancer. So if they've had estrogen removed from their system prematurely, so before natural menopause, and it's done rapidly, then they will see precipitous loss of bone mineral density. And that's a scenario where that's likely for a limited period of time. And maybe that's the right time to use something like a bisphosphonate, or Prolia is one of these that kind of crosses over. But using something where you're going to slow down bone loss because you know you're only going to need it for 2 to 3 years, depending on your cancer therapy. So that's a role where that kind of makes sense. The drug that I mentioned in that post is an anabolic drug. So this is the other class of drugs. So this is the buildup. They go by names of Forteo and Temlos, other brand names. So these drugs don't squash bone metabolism. They elevate bone metabolism. So what we see is in those bone biomarkers, we see the P1MP, or the bone building biomarker, go up a lot. And we see the bone breakdown marker go up too, which can be concerning for some people, because you think, oh my gosh, my CTX went up. But they always kind of go up together. And we now have, you know, hundreds of data points looking at these biomarkers. And so what I've seen is that they will always go up together, but we want to see, you know, if we're building, we want to see building go up more. Mm-hmm. And so the building will go up more. The breakdown has to go up too, because it has to make room for the new bone. And so then we have this ratio that we can do between the two. And so I use those drugs if we need to, because really the side effects are potentially from having, you know, an increase in calcium in your blood because of all the mobilization of calcium. So there's some potential side effects from that. But the big quote unquote risk is this fear of this risk of bone cancer or osteosarcoma that was found in rats when they studied this drug. You have to recognize, in those studies, those were rats that were very prone to developing cancer anyway. and you give them big doses of a drug that ramps up bone metabolism for the entire course of their lifetime. And guess what? They develop bone cancer. And yeah. So we've never seen, there's never been a published a case study or any complication in the form of osteosarcoma in an adult that has used those drugs. And there's been millions of doses delivered, right? So I think it's pretty safe to say that that probably isn't going to happen in humans. Still, we can't use them beyond 2 years. So we have to sort of limit our use of those drugs, still create a comprehensive program around it, because in the traditional medical model, you use that drug, and then once you come off of it, you have to go on another drug to prevent the bone loss. Mm. Our goal is to use that drug, create the metabolism of bone that'll support that bone, so that when you come off of it, you don't need another drug. Mm. And we've been able to do that successfully. So that's the drug that I would use if we had to use it. But I think I've probably recommended that 3 times out of the hundreds of patients that we've seen.
Yeah. And speaking of drugs, since you mentioned hormones. Yeah. What about women who have been told all of a sudden they're 60, they're too old to start hormone replacement, or I'm assuming something. I'm assuming that you will as a part of the program if it's indicated that it will be healthy for a woman. Yeah?
Absolutely. They are some of the biggest tools. So the answer is yes, but go ahead and ask the rest of that question.
So the rest of the question is some women won't know until they're in their 60s. That they might have missed an opportunity to get on a hormone replacement. And many docs are 60 and definitely nothing over 65. Now, I have interviewed a few that are like, everybody, no matter what your age, you should, if you need this thing, let's give you a small dose, whatever. So do you have a date, like a cutoff time for women?
Not a hard cutoff time. And what's sad though, is I see it all the time. Because the women that are getting the diagnosis are in their, generally they're in their 60s or late 50s, and some in their 70s. And this is where it gets really challenging. You know, most women going through menopause in their early 50s. So they are in that 10, 15, 20 years of not having any estrogen exposure. So it's funny because most people still think the risk is around breast cancer. It's not. The risk is around cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. And so the physiology question looks like this, which is, when a woman loses estrogen precipitously through menopause, her arteries start to get less flexible. When that happens, the theory is that you are more likely to develop plaque, which is probably true. And that plaque then, you know, it gets thicker, and that's coronary artery disease. And that's why women sort of trail men by about a decade in developing a cardiovascular event, so having heart attacks. If you were to then give a woman back estrogen after the 10-year mark, there is some data to suggest that you could potentially make those arteries more flexible again. You could break off a chunk of plaque, and it could cause an event like a heart attack or a stroke. The Women's Health Initiative, for, I'm sure you've talked about this on your podcast, for all of the potential harm that it did show this data as well, which is that women that were over 10 years out did have an increased risk of events. But those women were also more likely to be obese. They were also more likely to be smokers. So they had other risk factors. So for me, I feel like those data are real. We should be cognizant of it. But that doesn't mean that we have to have a hard cutoff. You know, if you're 60 years old, no way. If you're 65, no way. I've had women in their 70s that I've started on hormone replacement, but the process looks like this. They have osteoporosis. We know they're at high risk of fracture. So then we have to ask ourselves, are we more concerned about the potential risk of an event, a cardiovascular event, or are we more concerned about a hip fracture, which could either end or dramatically change her life? Mm-hmm. And so we know that she has that risk. So then what's the other risk? And then how do we make that decision? For me, we ask about family history. Do you have a strong family history of heart disease, strong family history of events? What is your lipid profile look like? What are your inflammatory markers look like? What is your risk of having an event? And then we can do imaging. We can do coronary artery calcium scores. We can look at the arteries. We can do a coronary CT angiogram and look and see, do you have, you know, soft plaque? Do you have stenosis? What is your risk of having an event if we start estrogen? If we go down that pathway and their risk is low and their arteries look great, then I'm not concerned. And I can't say that there's no risk, but there's always risk. There's risk
there's
of everything.
There's risk with anything you're going to put in your body.
So that's what we do. And there are plenty of women where we don't start them on estrogen because the risk is potentially too high. Mm-hmm. They've got a strong family history. Their arteries don't look great on imaging, but that doesn't mean that we can't then use off-label testosterone, progesterone, oxytocin, right? There's a lot of tools we can use. And we are then, you know, we're getting into a gray area where if you're using something like testosterone, you're also going to generate some estrogen, but not as much as if you replace it. So there's some unknown. But again, we know that they have that risk of fracture. We know that, that's the main thing that we're trying to prevent. So then we're just trying to hedge our bets a little bit on what are the risk of the interventions, but we want to use something powerful enough to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And exercise in somebody that has an osteoporosis, they get their DEXA and it's like, it's gotten worse. And now it's like, yes, you have osteoporosis, you know, and get that red line at the bottom of the page. And yeah. I've talked to people that think they can't do power walking anymore. They can't weight lift because they're afraid. I don't know whether that's true, but I bet you do.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the person. But the way I look at it is this, which is it's really so unfortunate, is the people go to their doctors and they say, okay, well, here's your DEXA score and you have a T-score of -3 and you have osteoporosis and you need to do resistance training because the evidence shows that, but don't lift more than 3 pounds. And they're like, well, wait.
Where's the resistance in that?
I don't know what that means. My phone weighs 3 pounds. I get this question all the time. People say, well, I was told to do this, but I was told not to do it. And I'm really confused. I don't know what to do. So what I tell people is, look, the literature shows that if you do resistance training and impact training through a study very clearly demonstrated this called the Lift More trial, a couple of different studies on this protocol, but heavy resistance training and impact training, and I can describe what they did, that will improve bone mineral density. It will give you enough stimulus to build bone. But the resistance training they were doing 80 to 85% of one rep max. Now, this is clearly with a trainer, somebody who's working with them. So for your listeners who don't know what that means, if you were, let's say, you know, you're a bodybuilder or a power lifter, your one rep max is the maximum amount of weight that you can do one time. You know, so like for me, for example, I'm not that strong, but for me, for example, like a bench press, like a one rep max would be like, you know, 225. So then for me to figure out, okay, with the Lift More trial protocol, what would that look like? It'd be 80 to 85%. So you just do the math, right? But that's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And so they're doing the exercises they did in that study were a back squat. So this is clearly like, if you don't know how to do this, don't do this on your own. But like a back squat is a full on barbell on the back of your neck, squatting 80 to 85% of your max. Wow. I mean, that's a lot, right? So it was back squat, overhead press, and a deadlift.
Damn.
Yeah. So those are serious exercises. But the reason why they chose them is that they load both the hips and the spine. You know, all three of them load the spine to some extent. And then they also did impact training. And their impact training was, they started out slow with like heel drops, or I don't know what the progression was, but their goal was to be able to do an assisted pull-up on a pull-up bar and let go and land with essentially straight knees.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty significant. Now, these are patients, I think their average T-score, oh, I could be wrong about this, but it was osteoporotic, because I think they were both osteopenic and osteoporotic. So their T-score was around the -2.5 on average. So they had people with real osteoporosis. They were doing these exercises. They did not have any fractures. They did have one person that had, a back sprain, which again, if you're training people to do deadlift with 85% of their one rep max, you're going to probably get that. But it can be done, but you have to lift heavy and you have to do impact, and you can't consider yourself fragile. If you consider yourself fragile and you don't do any of those things, you will continue to create that cycle where you're just getting more and more fragile. So you have to push it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Don't get injured.
Don't get injured. And if you've not done anything for a really long time and you're listening to this and you think you're going to go out and do squats and deadlifts, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Get yourself a trainer. And, you know, even online, there's tons of great beginner weight training videos.
Have somebody that can look at your form. That's a big thing. I've been lifting weights for decades and I'm still learning how to do a deadlift. There's so much like nuance to the, like, where is your weight? You know, which are you bending more, your knees, your hips? And there's so much nuance to it. So every time I record it, and people make fun of me because I'll put it on Instagram, but I put it on Instagram not because I'm showing off. My trainer is looking at it and giving me feedback. So we're just using it as a tool to deliver a video. But I think it's also motivating for people to see. And then I'm still learning. You know, my trainer, I have a message waiting that I'm sure she's going to be tearing apart my form, because it's something that we all need to get feedback from, no matter really what we're doing, but definitely in those, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, for somebody who's not weight training oriented, not going to do deadlifts and barbells and this and that, bands, resistance bands are super popular these days.
Yeah.
Can you get a good workout with the hardest one or the medium one if you can?
Do you know the gentleman, John Jaquish? Do you know that name? No. So John Jaquish is a guy, he has a PhD, and he designed the equipment for the company OsteoStrong. So okay. For anybody who's interested in osteoporosis, they've heard of OsteoStrong probably. OsteoStrong is a franchise that I have started doing some talks for their members. And I got to meet John, and I actually had dinner with him in New York a couple weeks ago. So super interesting guy, pretty polarizing. I'll just leave it at that. But he created the equipment for OsteoStrong, but then he also created a company called the X3 Bar. So he found that the amount of impact, or I shouldn't say that, the amount of resistance that you need for bone stimulus is a 4.2 times your body weight. That's why you have to do impact in addition to resistance training, because nobody can do 4 times their body weight in a deadlift, not even the strongest man in the world. Wow. So there has to be some kind of impact, or osteogenic loading, which is what OsteoStrong does, can do the same thing, but in a safer environment. So it's basically like controlled impact. What he found in that research, though, is that the variable resistance is much better at building muscle than is static resistance. So I have an interview with him. Actually, I've interviewed him a couple of times, but he goes through all the research and it's pretty compelling. So his X3 system is a band style system. It's a bar with bands. It looks like some other systems out there. He's just done some pretty techie research to figure out what type of bands are probably going to be the most compelling. I think it's a really good system. I have it. I travel with it. And he says it's all you need to do. I think from a health span perspective, I like to do more because yeah, I just like to lift weights, but also I think it can help from balance, fall prevention, other things. So I don't know that it's all I would do, but it's all he does. And he's massive. If you look him up, he's a beast.
I'll have to look him up.
Yeah, look him up. His last name is spelled Jaquish. He's a super nice guy, super smart. And the X3 bar, I think, is kind of the coolest way to do that. I think that it is an option from a resistance perspective, but you also then need some kind of either impact or osteogenic loading for bone.
Which could be the power walking.
Not enough. So if you look at the amount, so I did an interview with Clinton Rubin from the company Merodyne. And so they have one of the whole body vibration plates that's sold for osteoporosis. And so he did a really great job of looking at the essentially multiples of body weight. You could also define this as G's of, you know, gravity. So, 2 multiples of body weight would be like 2 G's essentially if you're standing on Earth, and walking will go between 0.8 to 1.2. So even power walking, you're not getting more than 1.2 G's or 1.2 multiples of body weight. So if you need to get to 4, it's not going to do it. And we see that in the research. We see that walking as an exercise will slow down bone loss, but it won't reverse bone loss.
So I have a vibration plate. It's not the company that you mentioned, but that's not an impact situation.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced on vibration. Had a great interview with Dr. Rubin, and that's on our channel. I have an interview actually tomorrow with a doc. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, from the company PowerPlate. So they also have a product that's very specific for bone health. I think that there's value to them, but there's so much controversy between the two different styles. So the Merodyne It is a high frequency, low amplitude device versus PowerPlate, which is a higher amplitude. And you can tell, I mean, when you're on it, the PowerPlate it's well named, right?
It feels powerful.
You are getting moved around. And of course there's variable settings and so forth, but the Merodyne feels very, I've actually haven't stood on one, but I hear that it's very mild feeling. And that group would then say, and Dr. Rubin's research would support the idea that that's going to stimulate more bone than is the PowerPlate because of I don't know all the tech. Listen to the interview. But I don't know which one to believe at this point. Yeah. And so I'm going to interview the guy from PowerPlate, and then I'm going to read some of the research on my own and come up with a conclusion. But right now, I don't really know the answer to that.
And what if I were to put on my weight vest and go for a power walk?
Yeah, I think benefit. I did some deep dive on this. I think that weighted vests have benefit for fall prevention, probably muscle development. Is it going to actually help to grow bone? Probably not. You know, you're loading your spine, so I like that. But are you going to hit that 4 multiples of body weight with a weighted vest? Man, I hope not. don't put that much weight through a weighted vest. It'll hurt you. But I do think that they are valuable. I use a weighted vest when I walk, and I recommend that my patients do as well. The studies that looked at weighted vests, though, they were looking at 10 to 15% of body weight, And so for a lot of women in this group, you know, they're 120, 130 pounds. That's 10 to 15 pounds. It's really not that much. So you're not going to get a significant load on your spine.
I guess I have to up mine because I think mine's only 10.
Yeah, but be careful, you know. So I have, because I also, the vest I use could also be used for rucking. And so in rucking, you go up to 50% of body weight. So it's kind of a different principle. Mm-hmm. If I get, so I can do 30 pounds and it doesn't hurt, and I'm 200 pounds, so that's 15% of my body weight. But if I get above that, like I have a 50 pound version, like a 20 pound and a 30 pound plate, it hurts my knee. I have arthritis in my knee. It hurts my knee. Like it hurts my spine. And I think that you can get in trouble because if you get off balance, you could go down with 20 pounds on your chest and it's not going to be easy to get up. No. So I think you got to be careful.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just stick with my 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Probably. But I do feel a difference. I mean, if I walk with that, I definitely feel the difference.
Yeah. I walk my dogs up the hill behind my house and it's especially, you put 30 pounds on, you can feel it. You put 50 pounds on, you really feel it.
I don't want to feel that. Thanks, Doug. I'll skip the 50 pounds. You and I were talking about a company and a product earlier, a supplement company. Did you want to talk about them?
Sure. Yeah. So the company, I was just on a meeting earlier with the company AlgaCal. So AlgaCal is a company that came out, I don't remember when they started their product, but they took a great scientific approach to creating a bone health product and using a very specific form and harvesting method of this algae product. And the algae that they found has trace mineral algae, but also had a fair amount of calcium in it. And so there was a thought that, hey, this could be really helpful from a bone health perspective. So they were very smart. They did some research out of the gate and put together a protocol that really showed tremendous, like surprisingly good improvement in bone mineral density. And they created their products. They have a few different products. They have a fish oil, and they actually just launched a new fat-soluble vitamin product that has good forms and amounts in it. And then their AlgaCal product that has calcium and other micronutrients in it. And so I was just chatting with him about their success and what they're seeing. And one of the things I think that's great about their product is that they have a money-back guarantee. And I was asking him about that. Like, how often do you guys get the people actually asking for their money back? Because what they say is, if you don't see improvement on from DEXA to DEXA, if it's been over 6 months, then we'll give you your money back for everything you spent.
Wow.
He said that they've had on average between 3 and 6 refund requests a year.
And they're a huge company. Yeah.
They're a huge company, right? And so, so I think it was a really compelling conversation. And I've, for people that, because I did a talk for OsteoStrong, was that last night? I don't know, recently. And it was about supplements. And so a representative from AlgaCal was there and we were kind of having this conversation around it. And a lot of the people in the comments were asking, because I'm pretty bold about my statement about needing to get protein from animal products and, you know, avoiding the plant-based dogma that is very abundant in the bone health community. Mm-hmm. And the AlgaCal kind of sounds like it fits in that. Right. And so people were saying, well, wait, I thought you didn't like, you know, plant-based anything. But what's interesting about the product is that it is a whole food product, and the forms of nutrients that they're using are the same forms that I recommend. So retinol for vitamin A, which is the active form or the quote unquote animal form. Same with K2, not K1. And so I could see where people would say that, but it does jive with all of my integrity and all the things that I've been saying. It says on the website, it's a plant-based product. Because it is, it comes from algae, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. We just have to look and be very, very critical about what's in it. But what's in it makes sense.
What about strontium? It's like a buzzword vitamin for a while.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So they also have a strontium product.
I thought they did. Yeah.
So we've been we use strontium in the practice. There's a lot of question about strontium because when you look up and there's in the bone health books that are out there. When people talk about strontium, a lot of times they will quote the research on this product called strontium ranelate. The ranelate part is a synthetic component that's added to strontium, which is a naturally occurring element. But when you get strontium ranelate and you look at the history of it and the studies that were done on it, it was a drug. It was made by a drug company. And there were some side effects. So it had an increased risk of blood clot and some other weird syndromes that were associated with it. But that was likely due to the synthetic part, not the strontium part. because we have strontium in our bodies. It's a it's a micronutrient. It's a mineral that's abundant. Well, it's not abundant. It is not that common in our environment, but we have it in our bodies. It's in our bones. If you take it as a naturally occurring element, like strontium citrate is how we see it in supplementation, there are a couple of human studies. There's not a lot of data, but there are a couple of human studies that show that it, in conjunction with other things, will have a likely increased improvement in bone mineral density than you would expect from the other things by themselves, although it hasn't really been studied clearly to show that. So I think that strontium has the capacity to make our bones look better on DEXA, because strontium as an element has a heavier atomic weight than does calcium, and they're sort of substituted for one another. They're in the same group on the periodic table. And so if you take strontium, it could potentially be substituted for calcium. It'll make your bones look more dense on DEXA. Some people will say, oh, well, is that false? I don't think it's false. But the question is, are your bones actually stronger? And we don't really know the answer to that. But I like it for people that have very low bone density for two reasons. And I'm almost like showing my hand to my patients right now. But for people that have very low bone density, I think that it's helpful from a mental perspective. I think a lot of recovery is seeing the improvement in bone mineral density, feeling like you're stronger. If you feel like you're stronger, you're going to do more, you're going to be more active, you're going to lift more weights, you're going to do more impact. So I think there's a psychological component to seeing your BMD go up. If I can add strontium and I don't think it's hurting you and it's going to make your BMD go up faster, I'm okay with that. I don't use it a lot anymore because I'm really more interested in strength. But if there's a psychological component that might be beneficial, then I think there's value there.
Mm-hmm. That's great that you take into consideration how a person's feeling about the whole thing.
Yeah, it's almost a little deceitful though.
Well, yeah. Like you said, you're not hurting people. I think it's from a motivation point of view, if it keeps somebody in the game of what you're trying to teach them to do, lifestyle change, we talked about that, then I think it's fair game. So you work virtually with people.
Yeah, we're all virtual. We started at the beginning of the pandemic and we couldn't have a physical location because nobody was allowed to have one. So we started that way. And then we realized that with what we do, if we stay in our lane, we don't need one. I mean, I would love to be able to see people in person, but it's so limiting, you know? Yeah. So now we are finishing up being licensed in all 50 states so we can see people nationwide. And we have a team now. So I have myself, a PA, a nurse practitioner, and we have five dietitians and coaches. So our volume capacity has increased substantially. So if they want to learn more about what we do, the easiest thing to do is just go to our website at optimalbonehealth.com, very specific for the bone health stuff. The kind of the now central source is drdouglucas.com, just Dr. Doug Lucas, D-O-U-G-L-U-C-I-S. That has access to both the health optimization side, the bone health side, and then we also have a new thing that we've created called HealthSpan Nation, which is a way for people to access myself and my team without being patients. And so it's like a weekly Q&A. We have a couple hundred people in there that ask questions, and we just sort of are creating a community that way. And that's been a lot of fun. That's pretty new.
Yeah, that's great. And do you get people all ages, men and women? And
We are really kind of, we're finding that our message speaks better to women. So we're finding that we're mostly serving women, which is not where I thought this practice would go, but that's cool. So the osteoporosis group is definitely going to be more women. And then the health optimization side has really become more women and about 10 to 15 years younger than the osteoporosis group. So really it's hopefully not the osteoporosis group 10 to 15 years later. That's kind of our goal.
Do you think men don't hear enough about osteoporosis as a potential concern for them?
For sure not. I mean, we do, you know, in the actual patient side, about a third of our patients are men. And and so they definitely are at risk, and they're at risk for a lot of the same reasons that women are. But the testosterone deficiency that we're seeing in men really as an epidemic is probably the biggest cause. Mm-hmm. Men are just testosterone deficient across the board, and it's happening younger and younger. So they don't have testosterone, therefore they don't have estrogen, therefore they're losing bone early.
Environmental problems? Do you think?
I think environmental, stress, lifestyle, short sleep, alcohol. I mean, you name it. It all goes against testosterone.
We'll have to have you back for alcohol because I know that that's a thing you have.
I love talking about alcohol.
I know you do. Well, this has been, I think this is like a packed 40 minutes or whatever it was for people. So I don't want to pile on. I want them to just absorb what we've been talking about because it's so important. And you said it a couple of times. You've seen how fractures can derail a life or end a life. And so there's no reason to live in fear, people listening. I'm not mentioning that again to make it sound like it's, you know, something that you should worry about. But if you are concerned, you might want to reach out and get help.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, just learn more. That's the biggest thing. It's just information. We didn't mention the YouTube channel.
I was just going to say that.
There's so much information. I mean, we're creating 3 or 4 videos a week at this point, just because there's so many topics. So yeah, the YouTube channel, if you just go to YouTube and type in my name, you'll find it. It's the Bone Health channel specifically. And it's just a wealth of information and a great community of people asking questions and answering questions. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, people, you know where to find Dr. Doug Lucas. Just type in his name. You don't have to remember any of the websites. And I thank you so much for coming back. So thank you very, very much for coming back.
And yeah, thank you.
You're welcome, people. I'll be back next week with another fabulous guest. Hey, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed that episode, and I thank you for listening. I'd love to connect with you on social media if you happen to play over there on Instagram and Facebook. I'm at RebelWell50. LinkedIn, of course, is my name. And on TikTok, just look for the Rebellious Wellness Over 50 page. And I look forward to connecting. You know, this is a big year of connection for us. This is how we get through tough times, is being in community with like-minded people. And if you're a listener, I believe we are.